If you want a title, love is the proof that I am a Christian. In the sort of middle of the last century, he was most well known. But Professor William Barclay was the professor of New Testament at Glasgow University. I remember him when we, Kathleen and I, were at Bible College in Glasgow in the 1960s, a long time ago. And he was a brilliant scholar, but he had this ability to speak to you and me in down to earth language. There's no sort of highfalutin theological sort of words about him. And if you read his, I think they're still published, the daily Bible readings, the daily study Bible. You can get the whole of the New Testament. I've got Matthew, and it's so thought provoking. And as I say, he speaks in down to earth English and writes the same. Well, this is from his autobiography. The BBC asked me to do a week's 10 to 8 in the morning talks on radio, and they asked me to take as the subject the modern approach to the miracles of Jesus. It was not a subject which I myself would have chosen, but I agreed to do it. And the line I took was the line I've always taken. I have always felt that Jesus is to be regarded not as a person who did things 1900 years ago, but as a person who does things now. And I therefore said that the miracles were often not so much stories of what Jesus once did, but symbols of what he still can do. I spoke of the stilling of the storm and said that if Jesus did still a storm on the Lake of Galilee in AD 28, it meant very little to me, but it is different if the lesson of the story is that in any storm of life, there is in the presence of Jesus confidence and calm. That the storms that Jesus stills are in the hearts of men and women, so that no matter what tempest of trouble or pain or sorrow may blow upon life, with him there is calm. On the last day of the week, instead of a talk, I was interviewed by David Winter, and he asked me how I had come to this way of looking at things. I told him that some years ago, our 21-year-old daughter and the lad to whom she would someday have been married were both drowned in a yachting accident. I said that God did not stop that accident at sea, but he did still the storm in my own heart, so that somehow my wife and I came through that terrible time with our both feet still on the ground. The letters after the broadcast began to come in, and there came an anonymous letter from Northern Ireland. Dear Dr. Barclay, I now know why God killed your daughter. It was to save her from being corrupted by your heresies. And since reading about the insults that Barclay suffered, that he had to put up with from Christians, I've been thinking about what Jesus said should mark us out as his followers, as Christian people. You remember he was in an upper room with his disciples, and they had a meal together, and then he took a bowl of water and a towel and he washed their feet. Jesus washed his disciples' feet. And then he said to them, "A new command I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you. All men will know you are my disciples if you love one another." Now, if you think about it, love is the most powerful force on the earth, isn't it? Love is the medicine that heals the brokenhearted. Love is the power that turns the light on for those living in darkness. Love is the heat that can melt the coldest heart. And love is the glue that binds us together, isn't it? Love is proof to the world that we're followers of Jesus. Sadly, as we have seen in this quote from Barclay's autobiography, sadly, Christians mess up so many times. I do. Mary Ann Evans turned away from the Church of England because of its hypocrisy and intolerance. Her father, a staunch Anglican, never forgave her. Even though she cared for him during the last months of his life, Mary Ann Evans was the writer George Eliot. On the first day of her ministry as a new curate, Liz Law was spat on by a man who did not approve of women priests. A Christian lady was going through the trauma of a marriage breakup and a divorce, and she stood in the quiet sanctuary of her church. And the minister's wife came to her and said, "I don't understand how you, a Christian who loves Jesus, can be doing this." And the woman was devastated, and she said, "If only she had put her arms around me and said, 'I am so sorry.'" Jesus said, "A new command." Now, if the greatest command of all is to love God and my neighbour as myself, what is new about this command of Jesus? Well, I think it's this, that we are to love each other as I have loved you. Question. What was the quality of the love of Jesus? Well, I think, first of all, it was unconditional. Jesus never said, "If you believe this or do that, I'll love you." The love of Jesus did not condemn. You remember that woman who was dragged in front of him by these men and accused of adultery? And he said, "I don't condemn you." The love of Jesus is indiscriminate. Jesus didn't seem to care about race or gender or religion, morality, social status, friend or foe. He loved them all. And the love of Jesus was a servant love. He said that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. And it was a forgiving love. When the men did their worst to him, he said, "Father, forgive them." You remember South African, what's his name? Nelson Mandela was freed from prison after, I don't know how many, 20-odd years in prison. And he became president of South Africa, and the apartheid era ended, where the whites had been so oppressive towards black people. Mandela instituted what he called a truth and reconciliation panel. And the idea, and I think it was Archbishop Desmond Tutu who was put in charge of it. What happened was that all those whites who had been guilty of atrocities and so on were brought before a truth and reconciliation court. And they were cross-examined, questioned, and if they admitted to their crimes and to their atrocities, then they would not go to prison. A lot of people protested, but Mandela said, "This is a time for reconciliation, not revenge." And at a truth and reconciliation meeting that was held in South Africa, a white policeman named Vanderbroek recounted an incident when he and other officers shot an 18-year-old black boy and burned his body. 8 years later, Vanderbroek returned to the same house and seized the father, the boy's father. And his wife was forced to watch as they bound her husband on a wood pile, poured gasoline over his body, and ignited it. The courtroom grew hushed as the elderly woman who had lost her son and husband was given a chance to respond. "What do you want from Mr. Van der Broek?" the judge asked. She said she wanted Van der Broek to go to the place where they had burned her husband's body and gather up the dust so that she could give him a decent burial. His head down, the policeman nodded. Agreement. And then she added a further request. "Mr. Van der Broek took all my family away from me, and I still have a lot of love to give. Twice a month, I would like him to come to the ghetto where I live and spend a day with me so I can be a mother to him. And I would like Mr. Van der Broek to know that he is forgiven by God and that I forgive him too. I would like to embrace him so that he can know my forgiveness is real." Spontaneously, somewhere in the courtroom, someone began to sing "Amazing Grace." As the elderly woman made her way to the witness stand, Van der Broek did not hear the hymn. He'd fainted, overwhelmed. Those first disciples heard that command, a new command, that you love one another like I love you. It would take some getting used to. It does take some getting used to, doesn't it? Loving one another like Jesus loves us. And also, loving each other carries some risk with it, doesn't it? What if love is not returned? What if your love is taken for granted? What if love is taken advantage of? What if love is seen as weakness? I mean, we read that Jesus had many disappointments, didn't he? Loving those he had come to save. You remember there's that story about him healing 10 lepers and only one came back to say thank you, 1 out of 10. And he said, "Has only one returned, this stranger?" Because he was a Samaritan. "Has only one come back to give thanks?" And then there was his friend Judas, one of his in a circle, a man who was so close to him, and he betrayed him after all the love that Jesus had shown him. He betrayed him. And Jesus, in that garden, when Judas came up, Jesus said, "Judas, are you betraying me with a kiss?" And then you remember there were lots of disciples, lots of followers who thought that as they listened to Jesus and watched his behavior, they thought, this is a bit too much, and they started to go away. And you remember Jesus turned to the inner circle, those 12 disciples, and you can hear the sort of is the tone of his voice, will you also go away? And then you remember he was in the garden there, sweating with fear over his approaching death. And he goes back to the disciples and he finds them all asleep. And he wakes them up and says, "Couldn't you watch with me just 1 hour?" And then there was Peter. I'll stick with you, Lord, to the very end, will you? You'll betray me 3 times.
What?
In a cynical frame of mind, Dorothy Parker wrote this. By the time you swear you're his, shivering and sighing, and he vows his passion is infinite, undying. Lady, make a note of this. One of you is lying. But however much love is rejected, ignored, taken advantage of, love wins in the end, because we're told love is eternal. Because God is eternal. Phyllis read to us Paul's definition of love that he wrote to the Corinthian church. And at the end of that list of definitions of what love is like, he said, love never fails because love is eternal. Some time ago, I read the biography of Martin Luther King. Incredible man. And as you know, as a civil rights leader who practiced non-violence, he faced violence with non-violence every time he was out there on the streets. And he wrote this. To our most bitter opponents, we say, we love you. Do to us what you will, and we shall continue to say, we love you. Throw us in jail, and we shall still love you. Beat us and leave us half dead, and we shall still love you. One day, we shall win freedom, and we shall win you in the process. And the civil rights movement won. It still has its enemies. There are still white Americans who don't want anything to do with black people, but the civil rights movement won in the end. Revelation, the book of Revelation is rather a strange book, full of symbolic symbols and. But there's a wonderful verse in Revelation which says, the kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our God and of his Christ. You see, God is not in the business of destroying this world. He wants to transform it by his love. And in a moment of supreme enlightenment, this is what Paul wrote, God will, through Christ, reconcile to himself all things. He will reconcile all things to himself, whether things on earth or things in heaven. Love will win. So let me encourage you and me that we keep on loving each other, no matter how hard it is. I'm praying at the moment for 2 sisters who will not talk to each other. I just pray every day that they will come to that place where they can forgive one another and be reconciled. So let's keep on loving one another. It's the one thing that proves that we are followers of Jesus. Father, it's so easy, I find it so easy to say love one another, and yet at times it is so hard. And Father, we ask that you would please give to us, each one of us, that grace, that love, that strength to love one another as Jesus loved us. Thank you again for this Advent time that reminds us that love came down at Christmas.